Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. My guest today is Mark Dusick of MarkReviewsMovies.com. Thank you so much, Mark, for coming back to the show. Really appreciate it. And I'm just like bursting with thoughts right now that I feel like I have to keep concealed for like a month. It's all those thoughts that happen after you have that initial reaction to the Oscar nominees. And I just am having them. I want to share them, but I feel like oftentimes people like wait until like a week before. But it's like I feel like this, for some reason, this year seems to be a bit more predictable than years past. I feel like this is this, but anyways, what are your initial thoughts on this?
I like that you said that, because remember a couple of weeks ago before the nominations came out, everyone was saying, this is the most unpredictable year ever.
Absolutely.
Every year people say that it's the most unpredictable year. And then every year once the nomination comes out, oh, never mind. It's
exactly.
So predictable.
It's
Jeez.
The same rhythm. It's the same
it
pattern
is.
That
it's,
we all get into.
And I love it. I love being able to kind of keep separated from the whole thing.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I really like the Oscars. It's supposed to be a fun show. And that's the primary thing. It's a fun show to give some publicity to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, which does some really great work in preservation and developing technology. They do really great work. I get it. But it's not, you know, the huge important thing that everyone kind of assigns to it. So I like being able to keep separated from it, but still enjoy it. So on that note, let's take the Oscars really seriously after saying let's not take them seriously.
Totally.
I think it's kind of coming into focus already, even though I usually don't give out official predictions until like the week before,
yeah.
Like you said.
Well, I was thinking we can talk about what we think probably will win and then also what we think should win.
Yeah,
I think the should win is
important.
Good, that's very important.
Who didn't get nominated, which is massive, huge oversight this year.
Yes. Which is one of the reasons why it's more predictable.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways.
Yeah.
All right.
Where do you want to start at?
I think we should just start right at the top, Best Picture.
Okay.
I think we should do Best Picture because this kind of trickles down into all the other categories in different ways. I think Amore is an interesting choice for Best Picture. I always am a bit miffed when it's like a film that has a Best Foreign Film nomination and Best Picture nominations. Like, isn't there something else you could have put into that slot? I don't know.
Instead? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's just kind of interesting when you have that sort of monopoly happen. It also happens sometimes with animated films, like Toy Story 3 gets Best Picture nomination and Best, or maybe it was Up, or one of
the, it was,
like,
no,
occasionally
no.
It's Pixar.
The only animated one is Beauty and the Beast, isn't it?
Oh, maybe.
And that was before the animated one. What usually, I think, Up and...
Maybe I'm getting...
Up got,
so
up got original screenplay,
year.
Which
okay,
kind of
right.
solidified
yeah.
it for... I don't know. I'm pretty confident
I thought there
Beauty
was.
And the Beast
probably
is the only
not.
One.
Yeah,
I think.
Probably not.
I don't
yeah.
know for sure.
Yeah. But Beauty and the Beast for sure. I mean, that was like going up against like Silence of the Lambs, which is
yeah,
the
it was,
most
yeah.
hilarious apples and oranges yeah. you could ever have.
Yeah.
But.
That's a great one, though. It's a deserving one to, you know, have that kind of, you know, milestone and the first and we think only one to be nominated for Best Picture. It's a great one.
Probably. I have all these other awards kind yeah. of jumbled in my head for
but
sure.
But Amore, so. Yeah, Amore is, I'm glad it's on there. I liked it. I didn't love it like a lot of people did, but I did like it. And it's nice to see the Academy and the entire voting branch out like that and to include. I always love seeing, you know, a foreign language film on Best Picture. It would be really nice to have a documentary listed on there one day. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but that would be nice. I'd love to see them branch out some more and put some interesting choices on there that people aren't expecting.
Yeah. So you like to have, you know, films that might not necessarily be just like the standard Best Picture, like having Best Documentary, like sometimes
yeah,
that you
know. I like having, I think that it's important to have the separation because, you know, nonfiction film is completely different from fiction, and it's worth having that and to recognize it because a lot of people aren't going to go out and see them on their own, even in members of the Academy in the big branch. They have too much stuff to do.
Sure.
So it's good to be able to recognize them like that, but it would be really nice to see some kind of breakthrough. I thought like there was a chance back when, you know, Michael Moore had his big, you know, wave of popular documentaries that maybe he might be able to be the one to break into it, no matter what you think of him politically or anything, just to have that kind of the import of being able to have a documentary list
sure,
for his picture.
Sure.
I thought that might happen. It never did.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. one day it'll probably happen. It would be nice.
Yes. Well, the film everyone knew was going to get nominated was Argo. I mean, that was a foregone conclusion. I know Roger Ebert predicted that was the film that was going to win Best Picture. It just has all of those elements that the Academy is most susceptible to nominating.
Yeah, it's historical. It's recent historical. It obviously is very fawning upon Hollywood, despite the fact that, you know, it was really only a few people in Hollywood who had anything to do with it. It was mainly the CIA, but still, it paints them in a good picture. You have some very, you know, nice,
like
patriotic
the artist,
people.
It's Hollywood enjoys celebrating itself.
Oh, they do.
And that's definitely part of it.
The reason Shakespeare in Love beat Saving Private Ryan, even though it's not Hollywood, it's still show business.
Which history might repeat itself this year with a different Best Picture winner from the Best Director category this year. I don't know. It might. It might happen this year.
It could. I think there are a couple of nominees out there. I have my own little way of figuring out who I think are really the shoo-ins to actually consider for Best Picture, and it's, you know, a Best Picture nomination, obviously, because, you know, there's no way for that except a write-in, which I don't think you can do. So Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Editor. If you have those three, those are the three categories. If you have those nominations, you should really be looking at those movies for, you know, possibly.
No, that's
more than likely
criteria, definitely,
because I don't think that's ever happened that, you know, a Best Picture nominee wasn't also a Best Picture winner wasn't also nominated for Best Director and Best Editing. I'm fairly confident, maybe a couple of times.
Yeah,
I think it has, but a couple times.
Probably has. Yeah,
it's
right.
Rare.
Yes,
it's rare. Argo is it's a crowd pleaser. People love it. I saw it. Couple of months, you know, a month or so before it came out, and I went to go see it again because it had been, and then the second time I saw it was with a crowd of, you know, regular old moviegoers too, and people were applauding near the end, and I'm like, well, Affleck sure knows how to push everybody's buttons well, and he does. I prefer
it's an enjoyable film.
Yeah,
film. Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's as profound as people are making it. I think it's great that he includes those opening few minutes where it contextualizes all the action, so it's not just a classic good versus evil tale. That's very crucial. But it really is a popcorn movie with some elements of topical comment. I think it's a popcorn movie first and foremost, but it's a good film. I'm not going to lose sleep at night.
Me neither. I'm not going to lose sleep actually over any of these except maybe one, and even then I'm not going to lose too much sleep over it.
Okay,
so.
Cool. Well, Beasts of the Southern Wild, you know, you said you didn't love Amore. I didn't love Beasts of the Southern Wild, but I really admired it. And I mean, I love Amore just because I can really relate to that, you know. I've known many people that have gone through similar kind of situations like that. It really captures it beautifully.
Yeah,
the devotion
honest.
Between two people at the end of their lives.
That's why I'm glad it's on there, because it's not an easy movie. People, you know, regular people who are going to go see this, because if they base their movie going based on the Oscar nominations, they're going to go into this and just, what?
Yeah, it's as anti-Hollywood as
brutal.
You can get. Yeah.
Brutal, brutal movie.
And I love that something like Beasts of the Southern Wild, which is a tremendous achievement, even if you have any kind of hang-ups about the story, just on a purely technical level, the independent budget they were working with, what they were able to do with production design, score, so many elements that the film did not get nominated for.
I can't believe it didn't get nominated for score.
It's one of the best scores of the year. Just unbelievable.
When I did my list of snubs, I went through all of them, and I looked at the stuff that I had been nominated for in their Critics Groups Awards, and I didn't have a single one match up. I have five snubs for best score, because none of them that were listed on this page right in front of me were any of those that I had voted for.
There are certain categories the Academy just kind of slacks off in, where it's like, well, this is clearly one of the dominant films, you know, in our category, so we're just going to give it another nomination.
Yeah.
It really has nothing to do with the individual quality of the people they're nominating.
But there's some good people on there.
There are some. It's just, I mean, Beast of the Southern Wild was one of the few scores that really sticks with you, and not in like an annoying way, but like in a way that's just...
It's perfect for what great music does.
It takes you back to that emotional place the film gives you. Django Unchained, I've loved Tarantino for a long time. From Reservoir Dogs through both Kill Bill volumes, I've enjoyed his work. I don't know. This one just felt like the most paint by the numbers to me, as far as just kind of taking the Bastards formula and just kind of toying with it. I mean, I don't know.
I didn't really get
me that much. Yeah,
I really liked it. It's lesser Tarantino, but I still really like Tarantino in general. I mean, I really enjoyed it. And you're right, it does take the Inglourious Basterds formula and just, you know, the quintessential sort of archetypal revenge scenario. You know,
moments of brilliance, I will say. Mm-hmm. There are certain moments, but I know a lot of Tarantino's critics are like, well, he's just a director who deals with moments. He can't really tell like a whole full story. And it's like I can see where some of those people come from, like Pulp Fiction and Kill Bill have that vignette structure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I feel like he kind of thrives more and kind of like, let's focus on this scene, go to the next one, go to the next one.
Oh, and Glorious Bastards is an incredible example of that. It's just a bunch of set pieces, you know, thriller set pieces assembled together, but they are so perfectly assembled together. I love that one.
Definitely. But I feel like in that case, he needs an excellent editor. He needs someone who can really pace it well, and I really felt the absence of Sally Mankey in this film, which was Tarantino's longtime editor. I felt like this film needed more tightening than any of the other films I've seen, just in certain places where the pacing could have been improved and really could have allowed... It felt long. It was the first time I saw a movie. Even Jackie Brown, I really enjoy just kind of sinking into that film. This one just kind of felt a bit sad.
Well, it's got two unnecessary climaxes in it,
sure.
One so that Tarantino can have a cameo, and the other one so they can go back and do the same thing over again that they did before. But, you know, I said, I still really like it. And some really great performances in there. One of them is nominated, and two other ones that I think should have been nominated aren't.
Which ones? We have Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz,
who also won the Golden Globe.
He should have been for Inglourious Basterds. He should have been in consideration for Best Actor for Inglourious Basterds. He is as important as Jamie Foxx in that movie.
Oh, he has more dialogue than anyone in the
movie. Supporting actor. I everyone talks about Leonardo DiCaprio, but I would have loved to have seen Samuel L. Jackson get nominated.
Mm-hmm.
The
performance no one's talking about, which is interesting because it is more complex than I think anything he's ever done for Tarantino.
Yeah, it's it's typical sort of villain role, but he does it so well, and playing the two parts of being just kind of subservient and then there's that one scene where he takes DiCaprio into the back room and he tells him exactly what is going to he's in charge of the entire house, but. DiCaprio even seems to know it. DiCaprio's character even seems to know it.
Because he's comfortable in that subservient role because it allows him to be dominant within his environment.
Nobody expects it.
Which is the most interesting aspects of the film, but it comes in like an hour and a half into it.
Yeah. So I would have loved to have seen either DiCaprio or Jackson nominated for supporting actor. And I don't know if Christoph Waltz would have been able to get into best actor, but I think he should have been in consideration for it. And there's a lot of performances this year that are either co-leads or are leading roles, but that got pushed over to the supporting category.
Oh, huge, yes.
Because
definitely.
Of the studios. The studios do this. I mean, the Academy, in the end, votes on what it is, but the studios, when they send out screeners and they send out, press and they send out all the ads into Variety, they say, for your consideration in these categories, and they list supporting actor, and there's the actor's name. If they don't think that the actor has a shot at a Best Actor nomination, even if they are a lead or a co-lead, they will throw them into the supporting category thinking, oh, maybe nobody will notice. And in this case, they really didn't. You have Helen Hunt up for supporting actress for The Sessions. She's clearly a leading role in that.
Yeah.
Again, Christoph Waltz in, and Django Unchained.
Django Unchained. It's a similar performance. Yeah. You have to at least give him that.
It's not too similar. He's
similar at least in his approach to it. Because he was the most likable person Bastards, even
but
though
he
was evil.
He's likable in Carnage. In Carnage, he's supposed to be a bastard. And I mean, he is likable as hell.
He is. But Tarantino made the right choice of making him a likable character in Django, because that's really his strength.
Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master.
Oh,
we had
exactly
this
what
argument
I was gonna say.
When we talked about The Master last time. He should have been up for Best Actor. He's a co-lead with Joaquin Phoenix.
I agree. If I disagreed before, I've steered to that for sure. Okay, let's just go through these best pictures a little bit. Let's get the rest out of the way. Les Miserables.
I'm curious.
A mess. I think the film's a mess. I think it's a. Again, moments that really impressed me, particularly Anne Hathaway and Samantha Barks. I thought those were the two performances that really, when the film really soared on its conceit. In other places, it really kind of all just comes down to the performers. They are really just completely, if this performer can't deliver, and it's not really notes. It's not really about the tones or if they're on key. It's about the emotional nuances that they're conveying. And some people like Russell Crowe, and I know everyone's keep harping on Russell Crowe. I just felt like, there were certain performances like his that it just, you could tell he was focusing more on trying to get the notes out.
Yes. Oh, yeah. He was
really,
trying.
I mean,
he was trying.
He was
and I
trying,
think that's,
but it was...
I think everyone else just kind of gave into the conceit of I'm going to be an extreme close-up and just act it. Don't sing it, act it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Anne Hathaway is, and Samantha Barks also. She's the best technical singer in that. In
Absolutely.
That film.
And she's the only one that did the stage. They're the only major performer.
But
she
manages
stage.
To hit all those notes and perform and act in it. And I think that she would have been a good choice possibly to have. She wouldn't have been on my short list of nominees, but I think she would have been a good choice to include with Anne Hathaway. I hate when actors get nominated for like one scene.
I know. Well, it's that same like
network.
Jennifer Hudson in Dreamgirls sort of.
Yeah,
you know.
Who should got an Oscar for singing because that performance isn't.
Exactly,
because
there's nothing
fantastic.
Else in the performance that's impressive. Hathaway is astonishing. I mean,
she is.
That one scene, it really is the entire arc of her character in that single take when she sings "I Dreamed a Dream." And I was so resisting the movie up to that point, and then when that happened, that really did just take me.
I have absolutely no problem with Anne Hathaway winning an Oscar for. Scene in this movie.
No,
and that's
me
what's
going
to happen.
That's how good
to,
it is.
But,
and I had no problem with Viola Davis winning but she didn't win for Doubt.
She has a great scene in that too. Judy Dench,
Shakespeare in Love. We could go through all the 10-minute performances. Exactly. Well, Life of Pi. Now, where do you stand on Life of Pi?
Life of Pi is
that's another mixed bag for me.
Life of Pi is the one I could lose sleep over.
Really? Okay, so you think that one should win?
No, it's my least favorite. It's my least favorite of the nominees. It's a really great adventure story, but it reaches out way too far. There's no way that you can convince somebody about God or religion or faith or anything with that story. And it just
and they're
so
very
far.
In your face about it. They're like,
they
by
are.
The end of this story, you'll believe in God. It's just they say it way one too many times. They have some very provocative things to say. I like how
they
it's about a character who doesn't ascribe to a particular religion. I thought that was kind of gutsy. Mm-hmm. Like the whole first act of the film, I thought was pretty gutsy. Then you get to the purely visual sequence, you know, the whole, you know, the whole section in the middle, which has some wonderful visuals. It's some
it
of the
does.
Best 3D I've ever seen. But it really all comes down to, like, how are they going to wrap this up? That's what I was wondering the whole time. And that last act, it really just fell for me.
It just fell
flat for me.
Yeah, me too. I think as a survival story, it's really well done. I think once they get out of that mode.
Which people had a similar thing about Castaway. They had a similar flaw about that, where it's that film is brilliant. And then the last act, it just kind of, it just gets too preachy, or it's like they have to hit the nail on the head of what the message is.
Yep.
And especially in Life of Pi, where you get this monologue, which I hear it's the same in the novel. I really have to read the novel out myself. But I hear that when they offer an alternate interpretation of everything you've just seen, it is so on the nose. It just kind of goes against what cinema is supposed to be, a visual storytelling medium.
Yeah, I get it. And it was one take, another one take, long monologue instead of in song is, you know, actually a spoken monologue. But
sure.
But yeah, that one cuts it down.
Yeah.
Lincoln, I think that's the one that's going to win.
You know what?
At this early stage.
I will not lose any sleep if it wins.
I've
seen this film 4 times in the theater, and the reason is because I've been waiting 12 years to see it. My father is the biggest Lincoln file. We went to Springfield, Illinois every single family vacation to junior high school. So I've grown up around the history of Lincoln, read the books, seen the documentaries. This film gets it so right. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Day-Lewis's performance, he took a whole year off to prepare research. It is just so meticulously dead on. And also, it's just so relevant to what's going on now. It's a film that's both timeless and very much of its time. And that Tony Kushner script, there's no reason why that shouldn't win best screenplay or best adapted screenplay.
Yeah, I don't.
For sure.
I think that's a shoo-in. I think for sure is adapted screenplay for that. I'm wondering if I'm wondering how much the fact that it is relevant to today, that we just went through an election and everything, and that people are kind of feeling a little bit like what is the role of government and what is the role of people in power and how far can they stretch it out? And I'm wondering if that is going to affect people in terms of voting for it. I think it's going to win.
So you think it's going to win?
This early moment.
Because it has the most nominations, but that's rarely the case where that means it's going to win, where it's like Hugo with the most and then Benjamin Button with the most. It's like oftentimes that doesn't necessarily mean it, but you think for the most part that...
I think at this early stage, when we're talking about it...
Because it has the best director and best editing as well.
Yep,
I'm going to make
sure
it has best editing, but that's definitely...
Does. That one, the three that have best director, best editing, as well as best picture, Lincoln, Life of Pi, and then the next one we'll talk about is Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, yes.
Which is kind of a surprise.
Silver Linings Playbook was a surprise that it got as many nominations as it did, at least for me, although I believe that is a Weinstein-backed production, and they are the most aggressive campaigners. So they always have to have one major horse in the horse
was
race.
Was it? Was it at the Golden Globes? Somebody made a joke about, I want to thank Harvey Weinstein for getting
it. Jennifer Lawrence said
it was.
I believe. Yes. Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence is awesome.
She's
cooler than probably everybody who's listening to this right now, and you should just accept that.
She is.
She's hilarious. If you just read some stuff about interviews with her, she doesn't care.
Yes.
She really doesn't care. But yeah, it has nominations in all four acting categories. I would hate to say that I think it's a serious contender. I really like the film. Don't get me wrong. I would hate to say it's a serious contender when you have some, you know, these other ones, Lincoln.
I think it's a very good film, but I wouldn't say it's one of the best of the year.
Yeah,
when you
have these other people in there, I would hate that. But it's hard. It's important to remember that the majority of people in the Academy who vote on this are actors.
Yes.
So that's going to have, that could have, the fact that it has nominations in all four acting categories maybe might have some kind of repercussions later on. I don't know for sure. It's still early, but
no, that's a very good point. Definitely. Well, and then you have Zero Dark Thirty. Well, let's kind of get this out of the way too, because this was a critic's darling. It seemed like this was going to be the front runner for Best Picture, and then it failed to get a Best Director nomination, which I'm wondering if that had to do with some of the controversy, with some of the politicians speaking out saying this is a pro-torture movie, which I don't believe it is at all.
It's not.
But it's people who haven't seen enough movies, I think.
Correct.
When it's like when you can see a movie and you know it's propaganda when they're slanting it one way or the other,
yeah.
Or if you're seeing a film that is just offering information for your observation, that's really what they're doing in this film. I don't think there's a single moment where they are hammering home some kind of
maybe this is all finally revenge for, you know, Hollywood getting involved in politics in some ways. And like, well, we'll show you.
I don't know why
Catherine Bigelow is snubbed. It makes absolutely no sense. The only thing I can think
of, I would have her over Ben Affleck a million times over.
Ben Affleck wasn't nominated.
He wasn't up for Argo, and that's what everyone's angry about. A lot of people are angry about Argo getting. But I think Zero Dark Thirty is vastly more deserving of that nomination.
I would have been fine with Affleck getting nominated as long as it was just, you know, an apology for not nominating for The Town. I would have been fine with that.
Sure.
But I mean, but I cannot imagine why Bigelow wasn't nominated. The only thing I can think of is because I don't think the controversy makes any sense. That people like specifically in the director's branch of the Academy didn't vote to nominate her because of controversy, while every other branch had enough support in their individual branches and as a collective to nominate it for Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay, where the entire concept of including torture originated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then to just have apparently the director's branch is involved in politics to the extent that they won't nominate her, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. It really doesn't, no.
Then you have the fact that I would say it would be sexism, except there's the fact that she won for The Hurt Locker, and she's also the governor of the branch.
Yes.
For directors.
So, yeah.
That doesn't make any sense either. I have no clue. And then the only thing I can think of is, you know, voting screw-ups, because they had online voting this year and there were problems with it. And, you know, but you would think that if, you know, enough people said, wait a minute, I voted for her in the top, how did she not get nominated? Someone might have said something off the record to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what someone needs to do. If you do awards journalism, someone needs to go out and find as many people in the director's branch of the Academy who will go off the record and tell you who they voted for and why they think Bigelow got snubbed. I think that would be an important story to tell if you are involved in any kind of awards journalism.
No, I think absolutely. I think we'll be hearing more probably after the ceremony or something like that.
There might be some for sure.
Because it's astonishing that Michael Haneke got we'll talk directing really quick. Michael Haneke for Amour, that is pretty astonishing. I mean, and as much as I love Amour, I almost would have loved to have seen this amount of love for The White Ribbon, which I think is his masterpiece. I think, or is it of his latter career? Mm-hmm. I think that was truly astonishing. So I'm happy to see Haneke getting this for, you know, something.
Yeah.
You know, Ang Lee for Life of Pi.
That was a given.
Some people didn't think so. Some people had like Tom Hooper instead. You know?
I don't.
It was gonna be Tom Hooper, Ben Affleck, and Bigelow, and all three of them got snubbed.
And then because the Directors Guild is completely, except for two, it's completely different.
Sure.
Which is strange. And I'm curious about that. Like I said, the Academy skews, you know, for actors, but the Academy also, in terms of demographic, skews older. And I'm wondering if that has anything to do with the fact that the Directors Guild, I'm wondering what the demographics of the Directors Guild voters look like compared to the Academy voters.
That
it is so different.
Yeah.
Because Affleck's not on here, Bigelow's not on here, and who's the other one who's not on here? Oh, Hooper isn't on here.
Yes, but David O. Russell is. I mean, there's a Silver Linings domination for sure.
Yep.
Steven Spielberg for Lincoln, it's his best film in a decade. I don't care. I'm glad he's there. And Ben Zeitlin for Beasts of the Southern Wild, a young, fresh face making his first movie. I mean, that is pretty astounding to get that in the top five for sure. That's pretty cool.
It's fantastic. He's my vote for that. If I were voting it,
If you're just looking at what he had to do to get that film made on the budget that he had and creating this whole world. I mean, the production is this should have been up for best production design, best score, and best cinematography. Absolutely.
Surely.
I was amazed that didn't get in there.
Yeah, everything came. And he worked with non-professional actors too, who had never been, who had never acted before. And
including a six-year-old girl.
Who's nominated for Best Actress.
And then we're making a big deal of, she's nine. Well, she was actually six when she shot the footage that she is now up for Best Lead Actress. I still think they should just have a category for Best Performer under 18. I think it's just so unfair for a child to be going up against adults. It doesn't really and I know all award shows are meaningless anyway, but they should respect the work enough to put someone in a category where they have a real chance at competing. I don't know. Would you put a six-year-old against an 85-year-old and a best actress?
I don't know how age is relevant to it, but I mean, it's because it's still the performance. It's what you're watching. It's what you're getting. I don't know. There's a lot of people who are – there's some people – I know you appreciate her performance, obviously, correct?
Wallace? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay,
sure.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
There are some people who are saying – there are some people online who are talking about this nomination. They're talking about her like she's a prop.
Because
she was, five or six, she doesn't have the developmental skills to be able to act. You have got to be kidding me.
Let me tell you, there are some props that still have a career 30 years later in the business. It all depends on what your technique is, how you get the performance out. And none of these actors would be nominated without all of the other people on the crew, the director. Everything has to be right to facilitate that performance being nominated. So it's really a nomination for the overall film, regardless, in any situation.
It is. I can understand maybe just keeping her out of the limelight and keeping her out of the process if you really care about what her as a child and what she's doing. But I don't get is people saying they should keep her out of that because she's a kid and she doesn't know what she's doing. You're worried about her personal well-being, but you're not worried about her enough that you crap all over what she did in the movie.
Because I think there are always five deserving young talents who just won't get in there for many different reasons, and it shouldn't be considered a smaller award. They gave Shirley Temple and Judy Garland, the patronizing small Oscar. I just think it would be cool if you could get five names in there.
It would be
under 18. I don't know. I feel like that would just
be. It would
be
nice. But that shouldn't keep them out of the running.
Out of the consideration. Sure. I completely
but it might,
accept
it might,
that.
But that might be. But then the other reason that we might not be seeing best documentaries or best animated films is because now, especially animated films, now has its own separate category. Maybe some of those should have been nominated for Best Picture, but voters felt like, well, I'm just going to nominate for Best Animated and I don't need to worry about it.
Maybe it
would end up hurting. How do you know that, an actor... So then you're going to have actors who are five up against actors who are 17, if you have it, under 18.
It's still...
Then it's still a huge age gap when you consider that, too.
It is. I just would love that to be discussed in future years. I think
it would
be interesting.
I think the biggest discussion, I've always said this, I think they need a Best Ensemble Award.
Oh, sure.
I think they need a Best Acting Ensemble Award.
Yeah.
I've been saying that since I first started talking about the Oscars in any kind of capacity. They need a Best Ensemble Award.
Absolutely, not just at the SAG, for sure, definitely. The best nominees, we'll just go through the main ones. Best Actor, Bradley Cooper, Silver Linings. Good performance. I think if it was someone other than Bradley Cooper, it wouldn't be as highly regarded.
I agree with you. I think he's great, and it's the first time I've actually saw him as an actor, and I think he's great in it, too. I don't have a problem with it, because he is, he's an up-and-coming star. I'm making air quotes. No one can see it.
This is his most interesting work he's done.
Yeah.
For sure. Definitely. Daniel Day-Lewis, I just think he's going to take it.
He's going to take it.
He deserves it. Although, obviously, you can say Joaquin Phoenix in The Master is as immersive of a performance. And it is. I mean, I wouldn't lose sleep if Phoenix won over Day-Lewis. But I would. I know. But it's.
He's my choice. He's my personal choice of who should win. But he's not going to win. The fact that he's nominated is a miracle. Because he said some pretty... bad stuff about the Academy Awards, and they don't really like that.
Well, he's an artist. He's above awards. And
it's almost like this is the FU to him is to nominate him because he said, I don't care about being nominated. And then they nominate him.
Sure.
Well, we'll see how you like it now, huh,
sure,
buddy?
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure there's many more people than Phoenix who don't take this stuff seriously, as they shouldn't, but they just don't vocalize it.
Sean Penn was notorious for it until he started winning.
Sure. Absolutely. But no, I think Daniel Day-Lewis should win. I mean, I'm right between those two. This is a year where there's two people where it's like if they either win, I'm fine.
Yeah, and that's fair because I think Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win, but you know, and I have no problem with that.
Yeah, and Denzel Washington, good performance in Flight. But good performance.
Yeah,
not great transcendent performance.
No.
Hugh Jackman in Les Misérables. I think he was singing a bit out of his range at certain moments where it felt a bit.
If we want to talk about technical singing, that part is out of his vocal range. But I mean, he does what he does with it, which is again he acts it,
and he's acting the heck out of it,
and people like it.
Yeah, and people like it. I just wish John Hawkes was in there for the sessions because that was a performance that, regardless of the flaws that the film had, I thought that was just as much of an immersive performance as either Phoenix or Daniel Day-Lewis from what he had to do.
Immersive performance, literally immersive performance that wasn't nominated was Dennis Levant in Holy Motors.
Oh, sure. That's not even up for foreign film, right?
No, it's not because they have that. Apparently, every country can only put out one really great film every year.
That's right. It's ridiculous.
That doesn't make sense.
It's ridiculous.
Dennis Levant should have been nominated. There is no chance of him getting nominated. But, I mean, he plays what? Like, technically, he plays 9 parts, but he really plays, like, 13. But he really is only playing 1 part.
Yes.
When you really think about it. But it goes through all these different changes in makeup and completely different personalities.
It's an existential crisis right before your eyes of shifting identities, and it's a lot of fun. It's kind of what Laura Dern did in Inland Empire and just as impressive. Best performance by a lead actress. I mean, you have Jessica Chastain, who I think is kind of becoming the foregone conclusion of the winner for Zero Dark Thirty. That'll be the big award that wins, as well as editing. I think Zero Dark Thirty has a lock on best editing and best actress.
I think that's a safe bet, too. And I think both of those are well-deserved wins if that happens.
I mean Chastain, I love her as an actress. I've loved she gave so many great performances last year that she wasn't up for, especially Take Shelter, Tree of Life.
She's the best thing in some bad movies too, like The Debt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she brought so much to even just the. I mean, her versatility was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure because I like Zero Dark Thirty quite a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like her character in that, there were times I felt like her character was like a bit of a stretch. I felt like it was kind of that idealized female that like women often get nominated for. Sort of like, and I'm not going to say this is a parallel, but like Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side type thing, where it's just sort of like this character who comes in, knows exactly what to do, and does it. It just felt a bit too easy for me. Like there was times her character felt a bit too easy for me. And her performance, while it's tremendous, I felt like there were times where she was kind of stretching out of her comfort zone almost in a way where it was just almost like I couldn't. There were times I felt, frankly, that she was miscast in this role.
Really?
Yeah, there were certain the big scene where she blows up at this guy in the hallway. That is kind of like, I'm sure if she wins the Oscar, that's the clip they'll show when
probably.
She wins the Oscar. It just felt like she was stretching a bit much, and I didn't feel like it was really like befitting to the. There were times I just didn't believe her character. In the midst of everything else that I could believe, that character kind of stuck out as a fictitious amalgam of people.
I'm a little surprised.
I know.
By that.
See,
and that's
I know.
Fine.
And I know a lot of critics aren't saying that, but I wasn't sure if it was the performance or the writing. I still think she is one of the best actresses now working. So if she wins this year, whereas I thought she should have won last year, then because that's what happens a lot of the Oscars too. It's a lot of makeup wins. Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings is the biggest competition. I don't think she's going to win. Again, really good performance.
I know a lot of people who think she will. And
really? You think so? So
I
you
know
think
a
she's
lot of
good
people,
enough?
I don't. Well,
she has a good enough chance, you think?
I think it's, well, like you said, Weinstein, Harvey Weinstein company. The Weinstein company's behind it.
Oh,
and
God.
I mean, so it's possible. We'll see what there are people who are, there are Academy voters who are not a very small minority, but very vocal group who are saying they're not going to vote for Zero Dark Thirty in any category.
Really?
See how much traction that picks
is
up
that
in
again,
the coming
is
weeks.
Is again the pro-torture claims?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Because people don't know how to watch movies, even
apparently
when they make them.
Apparently not. Emmanuel Riva would be my choice for Amor. I think that is a stunning, completely authentic, completely like you're just watching, you're a fly in the wall watching her go through this experience. It's and what an astonishing legend of cinema. I love Hiroshima Mon Amour is the thing everyone keeps bringing up. She's kind of like now the ultimate Amour double feature here. But I'm so happy that she's in there. Wallace, of course, one of the best.
Quvenzhané.
I wrote down the. Thank you. We will applaud that sure.
I wrote it down just to make sure because I knew it would be important to get that right at some point.
I had the pleasure of meeting her when she was in town for the press junket, as well as her mother. And her mother is just a wonderful person as well. Just someone who just really grounds her child and grounds her family. And I just feel like they're not going to let. She's not going to let fame get to her child's because that's a really, I mean, this could derail someone's entire life it being could. Nominated this young. But I feel like she has a really strong family base. So
It's happened before, too. So, I mean,
it has. And Naomi Watts for The Impossible, great performance. Great. I was just as impressed by Ewan McGregor in that film, which has gotten no real.
And Tom Holland, too.
And Tom Holland, which if you had that category, you would have had a good chance again.
Exactly,
Under 18.
I'm glad The Impossible has. The Impossible is one of my favorite films of the year, so I'm glad to
see
it.
Same here.
I think it should have had a lot more.
I'm giving you a hand slap for that.
I think it should have been up for, honestly, I think it should have been up for director.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah. I think
best visual effects. Oh, absolutely.
How not?
That wasn't even shortlisted. And they had like 9 or 10 effects companies work on just that sequence of the wave, because it's about, you know, the tragedy in Southeast Asia with the tsunami and the wave coming in. And it's a horrifying film. And again, the stupidest controversy when people are saying this is diminishing, you know, the human tragedy by just focusing on one white family in Southeast Asia who just happened to be vacationing there. This is a human story. It has nothing to do with their race, their whiteness. It is
their westernness,
their westernness,
where they come from.
It has nothing to do with that. I just think that is the silliest controversy.
And it's supposing that somehow tragedy, if you are. It doesn't make any sense. It's insulting because it's saying that if you are of a certain skin color, that tragedy doesn't affect you as much, which is basically what their argument is against the fact that the movie is in there, is that, you know.
Yes. And any film that tries to be the summation of a massive event like this is will always fail. It's always about the specific human stories that universalize something like that.
And the other thing is that ending doesn't focus on the family. It focuses as much on everything that they are leaving behind. That is the entire point of the ending, is that it is as much about what they are leaving behind as what they are. It has nothing about what they're going towards. They don't care what they're going towards at that end. They're only thinking of everything that they have left behind.
Yes.
And it's not just, you know, like, oh, our vacation. It's the people who they have met, the people who they haven't met, who they've been walking in front of, who have, you know, the corpses that are lying on the ground. That's what they're thinking of. That's what the movie wants you to focus on. Is not on their story of triumph and luck, but it's on the story that this is, you know, this is the exception to it.
Definitely.
And I don't get that.
No, that is so well put. And really, I think this is kind of the ultimate double feature with Amor, in that this film is about embracing life at all costs, and the other one is about embracing death. Really, kind of, it's kind of the yin and yang of cinema right now, but I think they're both equally powerful films. Supporting actor, Alan Arkin for Argo, not going to win. He's always fun to watch. He's always doing his Arkin thing, whatever.
He got nominated for one line. Forget about Anne Hathaway being nominated for one scene. He got nominated for one line.
The only thing Argo should win is best catchphrase of the year.
Yes.
So, for sure.
It's clever.
But Robert De Niro, I think this is his best work since Jackie Brown and Silver Linings Playbook. I think this is the only acting award this film really deserves, I think. Or
really?
At least, and not deserve as a win, but as a nomination at the very least.
Wow. Okay. But here's the thing. It's his best work since Jackie Brown, but this is more about his career since Jackie Brown.
It does. This is the first time in a while he's really been putting his full actorly thespian effort into something.
It started getting embarrassing there. What was that one? Killer Elite?
Oh, jeez. That was the one with him and Pacino?
That
was another one where
That was the other one. Killer Elite was the action movie with, was it Statham?
Yeah, it might have been Statham.
He got kidnapped in the beginning and he's awesome. Yeah, that one was...
But no, thank you, De Niro. You woke up and you got a great. It was the second coming of him and Matthew McConaughey this year. It's like, thank you.
Who's not on here?
You woke up. You did something. Yeah, exactly. Philip Seymour Hoffman for The Master. It's a co-lead. It's ridiculous that he's supporting at all. Really, I disagreed with you on that. That's crazy. I don't know. No, I mean, Hoffman is clearly the co-lead there.
Tommy, easily, yeah. He's easily co-lead. I don't know how.
Yes, that's exactly. And Christoph Waltz, too. You can yep. put him in that same category because he's the co-lead with Jamie Foxx throughout the whole thing. And he's really the more compelling of them. I mean, Jamie Foxx has to do his stoic blaxploitation thing, and he does it well, but there's really not much else he's required to do. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of being there.
Yeah.
He's kind of a prop in a sense in that movie. In a sense.
Christoph Waltz should have been, a great performance. Glad it's recognized, but that should have been either Leonardo DiCaprio or even better, Samuel L. Jackson for that movie.
Yes.
So that would have been nice.
And Tommy Lee Jones is a masterclass in supporting acting, I think, in that film. I think he's wonderful in it.
After I saw Lincoln the first time, I said Tommy Lee Jones is going to win Best Supporting Actor for that. Mm. It's the role that they love. He's a scene stealer. They love that. They really do.
He is.
I don't know how
really
it's going to turn out.
He controls the room whenever he shows up.
I don't know how, but it's going to turn out. That was my gut impression after I saw it.
Exactly. But now it's kind of anyone's game right now.
It is, yeah, because Waltz won the Golden Globe, and we're still waiting on the SAG Awards, which is always the most important one for the acting. So.
Yeah, if Jones, Hoffman, or De Niro wins, hey, I'm fine with that.
Yep.
Supporting actress Amy Adams for The Master. Adams just seems to be one of those actresses doomed to always be nominated but never quite get there. And I feel like the problem is she should have won for Junebug all those years ago and it never happened. I thought that was really her winning performance. I mean, I'd like to see her stretch in this role in The Master, obviously. What do you think?
I think I need to see The Master again because the first time I saw it, I thought of Amy Adams kind of as a prop. Again, I really only saw her in the background, and I thought it worked that it was more of a choice. The first time I saw The Master, I was focusing so much on how gorgeous it looked and then how, the battle between Hoffman and Phoenix that I just kind of saw her just kind of lingering in the corner, and I took that more as an extension of Hoffman's character and how that it plays off of him. I didn't really pay attention as much to her performance.
Yeah.
The second time I saw it, she was in the movie more than I thought she had been the first time.
This is going to be the craziest comparison here, but like Samuel Jackson and Django Unchained.
Yes.
She's kind of the one controlling the room. Like I saw the film three times and I really admired her performance more each time or how she has control over Hoffman.
When I finally see The Master a third time, I think I'll be able to focus on what she does in that. So,
yeah, definitely.
I'm looking forward to it.
Sally Field, one of the great joys of this movie going year was seeing her knock the role of Mary Todd Lincoln out of the park because I thought she was going to be so miscast. She's too old. She's too skinny. Just like everything everything that I know about Mary Todd Lincoln and just know from history, I was like, why is she there? But, oh, my God, I thought she was going toe-to-toe with Day-Lewis and just did it beautifully.
Yeah,
so.
There's one scene I kind of felt like you said the scene in the hallway with Chastain and Zero Dark Thirty. There's a scene where the two of them, Daniel Day-Lewis and she talk about death and mourning. That kind of felt a little too much for me.
A little too much in the acting or the writing?
Yeah,
I couldn't really pinpoint it.
It just felt like she was... It felt like she was acting having a breakdown or acting recreating a breakdown or whatever and versus actually having one. I don't know. There was something off about one scene in Lincoln with her performance that kind of turned me off to the rest of it. But other than that, she is very good.
Interesting. I didn't have that problem, but that's interesting. Yeah, I like that we're getting out these thoughts that so many critics are repressing at this time of the year.
It's just one scene, and it's just something like, okay. That feels a little stoic and a little...
Interesting. No, I thought she really captured the torment that she was going through, and as far as like what was going on in the private lives of her and her husband at that time. But no, that's very interesting. I mean, I think Hathaway's a foregone conclusion. I think she should have won for Rachel Getting Married back in 2008.
I thought she was
the strongest contender that year. I think she's going to win.
I don't know why. There's a lot of people who don't like Anne Hathaway. I have no clue why.
I don't understand. Maybe like their younger siblings like tortured them with old copies of Princess Diaries and they're like, I can't get past it. But I think she's lovely.
She's gotten past it.
Yeah, she's gotten past it in a big way. Helen Hunt for The Sessions.
Should have been in consideration for Best Actress. Don't know if I would have nominated her for either, honestly.
Really? Interesting. So The Sessions, that neither her nor Hawks really.
No, not really.
Really grabbed you in that.
I didn't have... My supporting categories whenever I do my voting for the critics are always way out there. Like, I had Sarah Silverman for Wreck-It Ralph. Oh, wow. Not for Take This Waltz, for Wreck-It Ralph at the top of my list.
Interesting. I have such oddball
things. Vocal performances
get
crapped on all the time. They get ignored no matter what. And I think that's one of, you know, it was a great vocal performance from Sarah Silverman in that, but obviously I wasn't going to be nominated.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to...
No, Take This Waltz was totally snubbed. I'm in the minority of really loving that film.
I liked it, but Michelle Williams should have been nominated for Best Actress.
Yes, it's much better than My Week with Marilyn, for sure.
Yeah.
let's just get this out of the way. Jackie Weaver for Silver Linings Playbook. She's there only because it's a Weinstein. It's that steamroller effect that happens with these films when they just start dominating. I mean, she's a wonderful actress. She was great in Animal Kingdom. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in this performance
There's nothing in the character either.
There's no character.
She picks him up.
She's the prop. She's the prop to De Niro.
She's the driver. She drives. She picks him up, and then she sits around the house and occasionally says, "No, don't yell at each other," and that's it.
Yes. Okay. No, let's really quick, because we're running out of a little bit of time here. I just want to sum up what we think should win. We'll just go with what we think should win for screenplay and animated film and foreign film. Really quick. Now for written directly for the screen, we have Amour by Hanukkah, Django Unchained by Tarantino, Flight, John Gayton's Moonrise Kingdom, Wes Anderson, Roman Coppola, and Zero Dark Thirty, Mark Bull. What do you think?
Zero Dark Thirty.
Okay.
Easily.
And I'll have as an honorary Moonrise Kingdom by Wes Anderson, which I think is his best film in forever.
Okay.
Let's see what we got based on material previously. Oh, okay. So this is best adapted screenplay. Yeah. We have Argo, Beasts, Life of Pi. Life of Pi should not win.
No.
Lincoln. Oh, of course it's Lincoln. It's Tony Kushner. It was just one of our great artists. I think he just should win. Yeah, Silver Linings Playbook's in
there
too.
It's the fifth one. And yeah, I agree with you. I think Lincoln should win.
I think Lincoln's
for best adapted screenplay.
Absolutely.
As well.
What a weak year for animated features. That's just
really
what I think when I look at this. I mean, Brave was I don't know. It was okay. It was kind of in
Frank and
Mimi
is okay.
Frankie Weenie's okay. Great opening, bad third act.
Pirates Band of Misfits is okay.
It's okay.
Wreck-It Ralph
is
a lot
of fun. Wreck-It Ralph's a lot of fun. Paranorman's the only one in here that achieves greatness.
Paranorman is really, really good, and I hope that wins. I can't imagine any of the other ones unless because they've stopped giving it to Pixar automatically, I think. So
yes,
I'd love to see Paranorman win, and I hope it does.
I absolutely. And as far as the best foreign language film, the problem that we have as critics is that a lot of these haven't even been released.
Yeah, I missed. hang on, I'm trying to even find.
I mean, at least no Kon-Tiki. I don't think that's ever been had. I mean, I know War Witch, A Royal Affair played the international, or at least had some festival. But if Amour, I mean, is the foregone
I think
conclusion
it, yeah,
in that
it is.
Category. There's
so,
no
and then maybe
real
update
suspense.
Update thoughts later when we manage to see the ones that
I know because I want to see. I really want to see. No, I think that sounds interesting. And then best documentary. I haven't seen all of these. I haven't seen Five Broken Cameras. Gatekeepers. I've heard great things about. How to Survive a Plague is a wonderful film. Searching for Sugar Man has its defenders and its detractors, but it seems like that's really gained a lot of momentum overall. In the season, and I thought The Invisible War by Kirby Dick was just a shattering expose on the
it's good
on rape in the military. I
Definitely.
Thought it was pretty amazing. So.
My choice for what I think should win is Searching for Sugar Man.
Okay, I think it's going to win. I think it's going to win.
It would be nice if it did. I don't know how the Central Park Five didn't get nominated.
That's
it wasn't even shortlisted.
Co-directed by Ken Burns.
I have no clue how that happened. That was that was the only documentary I had in my top 10 was Central Park
5.
It was
West of Memphis, and there were several snubs in that.
Yeah, there were a lot.
This year.
It's a good year for documentaries.
I even loved Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry.
Yes, another good one.
That was great. Became an instant Ai Weiwei fan after that. Thank you so much. For being here, Mark. It's so much fun. And we could just talk for hours and hours on this thing, but
I can't wait
to see it. Regardless of all of our complaints, we will be the first people to start watching this because it's fun to see people who did good work get a nice shiny accolade to commemorate,
yes,
even
if
it means nothing ultimately.
Yeah, and I think it's important that the Academy, when they're doing this, to recognize, yes, you do really great work, you give out awards, but to think about the show.
Yes,
because they
definitely.
Really need, that's one of the things that have been lacking in the last while,
yes.
Is that the show, the actual presentation of the awards, the show is not up to snub. I think the last time I thoroughly enjoyed an Academy Awards telecast was when Steve Martin hosted on his own.
I completely agree.
They need to work on that.
And it's been awful because they're trying to open a, like a huge net. They're trying to cast a wide net, get as many viewers as possible, and they're cheapening the show, and they're not making it about honoring the work, and they're just making it about, let's see how many Twilight clips we can put into this montage.
So let's, cut the montages. Please cut the montages. We don't care.
Here's all the action movies last year.
And now a thing for film noir, because Good Night, Good Luck was filmed in black and white. Wait, what?
Exactly. It's insane. So... the only montage they do is all their snubs. That's the only. They should at least do a snub montage.
Let us do that.
Thank you so much, Mark, for being here. You can check out all of Mark's reviews at markreviewsmovies.com. It's a great site. And for all my recent reviews and interviews, you can check out hollywoodchicago.com and indie-outlook.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.